Guitarathon is the greatest guitar sale on earth, and it's happening now. Get massive savings on a huge selection of electric and acoustic guitars, basses, amps, pedals, and other accessories. Get select Ernie Ball strings, 3 for $10. Save $100 on a Fender Special Edition Strat, or get a Yamaha acoustic for just $199. Plus, get special financing on select major brands. Don't miss these incredible deals. Available online and in-store, now through November 1st. Guitarathon, only at Guitar Center. Find your sound.
Welcome into the Locked On Pacers podcast. My name is Adam Friedman. I am your host, as always, of the Locked On Pacers podcast. Before we get to the great podcast today with Hunter Cuffell of 8.9 seconds, I have a couple of housekeeping things to deal with. So I'm not going to go too much into detail at this moment, but we are going to be rebranding the Locked On Pacers podcast. We brought on a new staff member. We're finalizing that details and a couple of other things. To get information about it, obviously just follow me on Twitter at FriedmanAdam5 or keep subscribing and listening to this podcast, and there'll be more information about that coming up. I don't want to go too much into detail until everything is finished up. Also, on today's podcast, I think it's one you'll really, really enjoy. Hunter Cuffell is the 8.9 Seconds co-expert, which is basically like the editor of that website. It's a really great website. You should go check out some of their stories as well. As always, you can check out my stories on IndyCornrows.com. And for now, I really hope you enjoy this podcast.
You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, so I want to start with, obviously last night, after teasing the fan base all day and dragging out as long as possible, the Pacers unveiled their brand new uniforms. Just give me your first thoughts on them.
I like the uniforms. I like the two jerseys that we saw, like the navy one, the white ones. I like those a lot. I like the way that the lettering is across the numbers. I think we aren't going to see a lot among the new jerseys of like top lettering, numbering, and then bottom lettering underneath that. I thought that was a cool look to have, and then kind of have it be a circle on the jerseys. I thought that was cool. And I like the stripes on the side panels as well. So I thought the jerseys were very well done. I think the seal of basketball or whatever that is corny as hell, and I'm not really sure why that, corny, no pun intended there, is, I don't really know why that's around. And as far as the court design, I don't have too much to say about that, but I thought, I definitely didn't dislike it. So what did you think?
So I like the jerseys because, I mean, everything Nike does, their designs are at least a little better than any other brand, I think, just in general, what they do. They did a really good job. They did a really good job with the NFL jerseys, kind of cleaning them up. But, I mean, the jersey's fine. It's the motto that I kind of have a problem with. It's not that it's not bad. It just doesn't really make sense. Kind of, like, I understand what they're trying to do, but it seems kind of, like, weird and pushy. Like, we grow basketball here. It just seems kind of like, I don't know. It puts it too much, like, it makes people think that Indiana's, like, all farmland, which it really actually isn't. And it's kind of, I don't know. I find it a little weird what they're trying to do with it. But I didn't have a problem with the court design. I mean, it's not that much different. They're trying to link it with the jersey, so that kind of is cool. And, I mean, I think the circle with the Pacers, it looks not, like, great, but it's not anything, like, I wouldn't complain about it. It's not like our last jerseys were something spectacular either. I mean, they were literally just solid color Pacers. So, I mean, it's not that much better than those. But what do you think of the We Grow Basketball Here thing?
Yeah, it's not what I would have come up with, for sure. I think it's a weird thing to, like, try and, for some reason, go super hard into, like, owning some sort of agricultural heritage. Because, like, number one, you're not really the only NBA team that's kind of, like, suggesting that Indiana is the only place where corn grows, which is kind of
definitely not
stance to have.
Definitely not.
And, yeah, it's like you said, that I felt like there were a lot more angles that you could have gone with that were much more native to Indiana or Indianapolis, instead of, like, just growing corn and also basketball. I get where they were coming from, and, like, Indiana has a really rich basketball history, and, like, trying to access the tradition and that sort of thing. I get where they were coming from, and I can see the thought process that led to it, but it's definitely not how I would have done it.
Yeah, I wasn't a huge fan of the last motto, but it's better than this one, like the blue collar gold sweater thing. Like, I kind of like that motto, at least because it had some kind of, it felt like a little bit cooler, I guess. This one just seems like, it's almost like they're accepting their rebuild in a sense. Like, this is kind of like, that's what they're trying to, like, the last one was like, we're Swaggers, like, we're the tough defensive team, you know, that was like the idea behind it. And then this one's like, yeah, we're going to stink, so we're kind of going to talk about rebuilding. That's how I kind of read it like that. But
That's interesting. That's like a subconscious just admission of defeat.
Well, because I remember, I think the Blue Collar Gold Swagger one came around 2012-13, about when they like had finally gotten good again and they were playing that kind of style. And it just seemed like that was kind of they were trying to brand themselves as like the tough nose, defensive minded team. And now I think that they're trying to rebrand, obviously, because without Paul George, you have to kind of reset everything because it's afraid of resetting. But I think it's part of this like, we're rebuilding and we're trying to like homegrown talent almost kind of thing too. I mean, I read that somewhere because that's kind of what, I mean, it's not that much homegrown talent, but it's kind of the idea that we want Indiana guys sort of, but I don't know.
Sure.
We'll see how it plays out. I can see how it kind of settles on me throughout the rest of the year. I think the jerseys will be fine because it's just kind of, it's a different look and it'd be something to buy because the last jersey, I mean, like, I wasn't a huge fan of the Hickory jerseys. They were kind of cool, but the red didn't really make sense. So, I like the new jerseys personally. So I just wanted to go a little bit off the jersey thing and just say, so I saw on Twitter you had a take that you said the Thunder jersey you don't think is the worst jersey in the NBA. What is your worst jersey in the NBA then?
Oh yeah. I've been kind of ready to die on that hill for a while because I feel like the Thunder jerseys get such a terrible reputation, and I'm not trying to go out and buy Thunder jerseys. So I don't want to say that I'm like some Thunder jersey stan or anything, but I just don't think they're the worst. I really don't like the Cavaliers jerseys, and I really don't like the Atlanta Hawks like lime green jerseys. I think those are both way grosser than anything the Thunder came.
I am so with you on the Cleveland jersey. The Cleveland jersey,
it's bad.
The black one is really nice. I mean, I'm not a big sleeve jersey fan, but the black one is nice. But it's that yellow and then the one, whatever it is like just, and then they have that like weird orange one. It's just kind of ugly. Like it looks like the old Tampa Bay ones that weren't like Buccaneers ones. That they're just ugly. So I'm with you on that. I was looking. I'm like, what I think the worst jersey is. I'm like, that's one of the worst ones. I mean, the lime, anything that uses neon colors is awful.
It's just bad. Yeah, and I wasn't even thinking about those gross orange like creamsicle jerseys, like the throwback ones that they have. Those are even a next level of gross looking. But I just think just the normal, like, their wine and gold colors, that's not a color scheme that I'm really into. And I saw, like, I don't think they've unveiled their Nike ones, but they had, like, there was a picture of some, like, model thing that got leaked, and I thought they looked even worse. So we'll see when they come out. But, yeah, those, I would take the Thunder jerseys over the Cavs jerseys any day.
I'm so glad you said the Cavs thing. I mean, I've been thinking that. Like, once you said that tweet, I started thinking about it. I'm like, the Thunder ones are not great, but those Cavs ones are. Most of them are ugly. Most of the black ones are solid, but the rest are ugly. So the court design. Do you have any opinions on any court designs in the NBA? I got a couple.
Not like super, super hard opinions. So I'll let you take that one away.
I mean, I was just gonna say, the new court design, it didn't really change anything. I think that much. It's just kind of like a little more cleaner cut from what I kind of got, and I mean, I just thought that there were some better ways they could go. Like, I like the way the Hornets went with their court, sort of that kind of like 3D-ish buzz look. I think there would be some kind of cool racing thing you could do with the Pacers court in a sense, but I mean, I'm just kind of spitballing what I have on my mind right now, but that was kind of my thought. Like, they could do some kind of checkered flag thing. Like, that's what the logo, with the motto, that's what they should have gone. I think they should have braced more than the farming heritage, the racing heritage here, because that's kind of what their team name is anyways. So,
yeah, I was shocked to not see that involved in any way. I know, like, the Miller Time podcast was kind of joking about, like, the checkered flag jerseys, and obviously no one thought that it would go that far, but I expected it to see it make an appearance somehow.
I want to take a break from today's podcast to tell my listeners about the presenting sponsor of the Locked On Pacers podcast, which is SeatGeek. SeatGeek is the number one ticketing site around. As my listeners might already know, I've used SeatGeek in the past numerous times to buy Pacers and Red tickets. But actually, the next thing I'm going to use SeatGeek for is to buy tickets to see Kendrick Lamar. He's coming to the United Center up in Chicago in late August. I've been going on the site the past couple weeks, looking at tickets, trying to get the best deal. A great part about SeatGeek is, one, they show the ticket price including the fees. There's no surprise cost when you go to buy the tickets. You know the price up front. Also, they have this great thing where they show you the value of a ticket. So basically, it's like a formula. They give you a number that shows you if you're paying a fair price for a ticket. I've been looking. I found some great seats that are for like $100 that have like a 75, 80 rating. I found other ones that have are $60 that also have about a 90 rating. It's really awesome. I love SeatGeek. And actually, because you're one of my listeners, if you use SeatGeek for the first time, you can use the promo code LOMBA to get a discount on your tickets. That's the promo code LOMBA. When you use SeatGeek, make sure to use that promo code. And now back to the podcast. So I'm just getting everybody's Paul George take I have on the podcast. So I want to get your just Paul George trade take, whatever you have on it.
Okay. Yeah. So as far as the package, the return, it's not the package that I would have taken. But I think from everything we've heard since the trade, it's about as clear as can be that in Kevin Pritchard's view or in the front office's view that Oladipo and Sabonis was the best deal that they'd heard. And so that was the deal that they were going to take. So I don't personally agree with that. When we heard that Gary Harris and the 13th pick were available, I personally would have taken that package over Oladipo and Sabonis, especially because you get more cost-controlled years of Gary Harris, who I think might be better than Victor Oladipo already. And plus the 13th pick, there's still a lot of good guys available at 13. Like Donovan Mitchell won at 13, and you know he plays the same position as Gary Harris, but he, at least in summer league, looked really, really, really good. And so I kind of think that that package would have been better, and may even have taken Kevin Love, although it seems like it would have been hard to trade him for more assets. I'm not sure what the market for Kevin Love is anymore, especially since the Cavaliers haven't moved him and are even looking to move Kyrie Irving instead now, although, you know, there are definitely circumstances there. But I don't think Oladipo and Sabonis are bad players necessarily. I don't think I'm as high on them as Kevin Pritchard seems to be. I think they both have potential to be good players. I just think they also have a lot of flaws that I don't think are necessarily going away anytime soon.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not sure that the Oladipo Sabonis is a better deal, like you said, than Gary Harris in the 13th pick. Obviously, Donovan Mitchell looked really good in summer league, but that's not, let's not like jump ahead of ourselves. He could still be, who knows? Summer league doesn't always indicate much. But I'm gonna. So I actually Gary Harris. I saw Gary Harris. I go to the Monon Center here in Indianapolis, and I saw Gary Harris there this week because he works out there every morning, and I'm just watching him shoot kind of stuff. I know it's kind of a humble drop, but I was watching him shoot, and I haven't watched Oladipo play like up front, but watching Gary Harris shoot, I mean, he is. Got a really good three-point shooting form. I mean, like, I was just kind of sitting in, like, this glass, kind of you can watch on the outside. I was watching him shoot for probably a solid 10 minutes, and I don't think he missed more than two threes. He was shooting, just constantly putting up threes, and he kept making them. So, I mean, from the eye test, I haven't met Oladipo, so from my eye test, I like Gary Harris. But at the end of the day, like you said, it was what Pritchard thought, and I guess he must have really valued Oladipo. And there's a really good argument you can make that Oladipo kind of grunt was stopped sort of in Oklahoma City, and growth was stopped, so he could become kind of the what he was kind of on track to become, a 20-point scorer. So we'll see what happens with it. I'm a big fan, though, of they should have waited as long as possible, because if you look in the past on past trades with superstars, usually if you there's a kind of this balance, but like if you don't accept an offer between, you know, the draft, unless you don't, if you don't get an offer before the draft, usually they're all kind of mediocre between the draft and free agency. Like, if you did the Minnesota did with Kevin Love, where they kind of just waited past free agency for something to happen, I think the Pacers could have got a better offer from either Boston, or even if this Kyrie thing happened, I think they could have figured out a way to switch the flop Kyrie for George. I don't know what you think on that, but I think there was a way with the pick, I mean, they could have flipped George for Kyrie.
I think you're definitely right there. In terms of, like, if it doesn't work out at the draft, which clearly it didn't because he didn't get traded, and then there's no reason to rush to make a deal before July 1st or even before the season starts. Now, you can definitely make the argument that we can't have this guy on our team by opening night because that'll just torch our locker room. But you know, if that's the way you want to go, you can rush to trade him before the season starts. There's an argument there at least. But yeah, if you don't have a deal that you like, just wait, because something, especially in this new CBA and this new NBA, shoes are going to drop, things are going to happen. And like we're seeing with this Kyrie Irving thing. So just hold on a little bit, because things are going to shift and a better deal may present itself. And so, yeah, if Paul George is still in the Pacers right now and Kyrie Irving is on the trade block, like, who knows what could happen?
Yeah, especially because I don't think the Oladipo Sabonis trade was going to, like, go away all of a sudden. Like, it was going to be here 3 weeks after whatever. I mean, I don't think – even when Oklahoma State did in free agency, it wasn't like – they didn't clear, like, cap space and need to make some big signing. Like, they were just flipping a shooting guard for a better small forward. Like, you can make the argument that it would have been there no matter what. So – especially if you had waited, because I don't think you can get Paul George or Kyrie straight up. I like don't think that's an offer, but I think there was a package where you could put the future first round pick or some other players on the Pacers to get Kyrie. But I think part of it though is Pritchard was just kind of ready to move on, it sounded like, especially like they just wanted to get rid of him and go to free agency and kind of build their team, which is an argument that if they don't trade Paul George, they can't make any other signings. But I think at the end of the day, if you had waited and you could have got Kyrie, that's better than anything you could have done in free agency. Because Kyrie is 25, he has looked fantastic in the playoffs. I don't know how he'd be without LeBron, but he's clearly one of the best 15 players in the league, I think. I think that's almost guaranteed. So I'm just sort of mad about what Pritchard did. I can understand where he was coming from, but I just don't understand why he wouldn't have waited 3 more weeks. Like, it's not like it would have gone away, at least for Gordon Hayward to sign. Like, that seemed like kind of a jump if he didn't. Not letting Gordon Hayward sign first with the Celtics. But where do you, I don't know how much you're following, but where do you think Kyrie is going to land?
Oof. It's really hard to come up with a deal that makes sense for both sides. And, I mean, clearly, because if it was easy, you know, something would have happened by now.
Yeah, I had the same problem. I was kind of thinking about
it. It's really hard.
Because it's like, how much is he worth? And he's under contract, so are the Cavs going to, like, undersell him because they can just say, screw it, you stay on our team, you're on cut of 2 more years, what is he going to do, not play basketball? Like, I agree, there's not any great offers out there.
Yeah, I will say it's even harder to come up with a deal to one of the four teams that he suggested. He picked like some of the worst four teams with like draft assets to give back that he possibly could have. I mean, he's not going to the Timberwolves unless Wiggins is in the deal, and I don't know I think the Timberwolves should do that if, you know, that's the stipulation, but I'm not sure they will. Same with the Knicks and Porzingis, and I'm not sure if I'm the Knicks that I would put Porzingis in that deal. The Heat don't really have anything to give back, and the Spurs don't really have anything to give back because they're not going to trade away Tony Parker. And so Zach Lowe reported that the Cavs are looking for, first and foremost, like a blue-chip young guy in the deal. And then when the Clippers apparently offered something, more details leaked that they were looking for like a draft assets, a blue chip young guy, and a veteran starter, which is just like there's 30 teams in the league. There's not that many people who just have that to just, you know, spare for to just all of a sudden bring Kyrie Irving into their plans. And yet Kyrie Irving's a really special player. I'm not sure I would put him in the top 15, but he's definitely up there. And he's definitely better than Victor Oladipo and Domantas Sabonis. But it's just, like, it's really hard to just all of a sudden come up with that sort of package, no matter what team you are. And so, obviously that's why players of his caliber don't really get moved all that often. It's hard to come up with a deal. We'll have to see.
Yeah, the four teams he chose, I think you kind of almost have to dismiss. Unless Minnesota offers Wiggins in a deal, he's never getting traded to Minnesota, like you said. So you said I'm not sure I think Minnesota should trade Wiggins, and probably the deal would be Wiggins and, I guess they can't send Teague yet, right? They have to wait till December because they just signed him.
Yeah, they wait till December.
So
yeah.
I don't know how you put a package together to match contracts too. But, so do you think Kyrie is better than Paul George? Where's kind of your thought on that?
No, I would take Paul George over Kyrie just because of, there's much fewer two-way wing superstars in the NBA than there are point guards. It's so point guard heavy, and if Paul George is helping you on both sides of the ball and can, you know, really space the floor and play lockdown perimeter defense. Those are much, those skills are way more valuable than just isolation scoring or finishing around the rim at the point guard position. So I would definitely take Paul George over Kyrie, but that's not an insult to Kyrie. It's just Paul George is really good.
Yeah, so where do you have Paul? You have Paul George as like a top 15 player or a top 10? I'm just trying to gauge where you have him.
I would put him at like 11th or 12th.
Okay. Okay, because that's about where I would put him too. I just think with Kyrie, he's younger, and
sure,
we haven't seen him in his prime sort of lead a team. So, I agree with you on the two-way thing about Paul George. I think Kyrie is a much better offensive player in some ways than Paul George is, which could make up for some of his defensive things. Because none of the point guards, there's not any like great defending point guards in the NBA that can score 25 points a game too. I mean, Russell Westbrook's not a great defender. Harden's not a great defender. Sure. Chris Paul is maybe the closest one, but he also doesn't score 25 points a game. So
yeah, he's getting up there in age as well.
I mean, like when I think of defensive point guards. I mean, George Hill is a decent defensive point guard, but he can't score nearly like Kyrie can score, so it's not even a question there. But I sort of agree with you on the fact that I think Kyrie just won't get moved at the end of the day unless some like team can blow away the offer. Because like you said, there's like maybe three teams in the league that can offer what they're asking. And if you're Cleveland, like I don't think you have an incentive to just trade him because like he's under contract and it's two more years. And I'm not sure, like he doesn't really have any leverage besides his word almost. And I don't, it depends.
Yeah.
And the owner, DeGilbert, doesn't seem like he has much respect for his players' opinions sometimes. It seems like he just kind of does what he wants.
No.
He said, I know, hot take right there. If DeGilbert listens to this podcast, and he'll come yell at me. But, I mean, he doesn't seem like he cares that much. He does what he wants. He's a billionaire. It's a lot of money. I think he just kind of does what he wants, and it doesn't matter to him. So, I mean, the Suns are the only one I can see making sense because you get Bledsoe and, like,
yeah,
Josh Jackson and something else. That would make sense. But I don't really know how you trade Kyrie to a team to get enough pieces to try to win next year and for the future. Like, that's like wanting right. three different things at one time, and it doesn't really make sense to me. But
I will say, you know, if I'm just choosing the universe that I want the most, like Kyrie on the Knicks or like some team where he's the number one scoring option, I would absolutely love to see that. And so if I could just, you know, wave my magic wand, I want Kyrie on his own team, because all the, like, the last year's offensive explosion where we saw all the 50-point games and all the awesome triple-doubles, like, that is not going to happen next year because all those stranded superstars, all those guys got a lot of help, like, almost every single one of them. Russell Westbrook, DeMarcus Cousins, Anthony Davis, like, James Harden, Chris Paul, they're all, like, teaming up, and Jimmy Butler's on the Timberwolves now. So we need someone who is just going to, like, throw wins aside and just try and score 50 every night, and Kyrie Irving is the perfect guy to do that. And so I really, 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 like, the basketball fan in me really, really wants to see that. I'm just not sure if it's going to happen.
Yeah, I think Kyrie was maybe the most exciting player to watch in the playoffs and at least the finals last year. I mean, the ability of him to get to the rim and what he was doing around the rim and hitting almost every layup, like reverse hand, it was awesome. I mean, he is just he has definitely a tool of tricks in his bag that are like we haven't even seen yet of his offensive play, because he's really fun to watch. I agree with that. Like, and if him by himself, you could imagine him shooting 30 shots a game, going to the rim and doing all kinds of acrobatic, like over his head flick layups and step back threes, and it would be really interesting. It'd be really fun to watch for sure. I didn't even really think about how next year's might be a little more boring with all these superstars teamed up, because I guess Kawhi is the only one that's not going to be teamed up, but he's not going to be some Harden or Westbrook type scorer, right? I guess LeBron's by himself next year. He'll also be pretty fun to watch.
Ooh, yeah, I didn't think about that. If Kyrie leaves, then LeBron will also be. That would, you know, that could be cool too.
But LeBron might score 30 next year if he's by himself. Again, I mean,
that'd
I think
be awesome.
Yeah. All right, I want to move on to Pacers stuff again.
All right.
Because we got a little bit into Kyrie talk. But so next year, clearly the Pacers' best two players are probably Victor Oladipo and Miles Turner. I have a belief that one of them at least is going to break the 20-point threshold, just because on an NBA team, that any NBA team, there's always one player that kind of scores 20 points because he shoots 30 times a game or whatever because he gets so many shots. I think Turner will be the one to break it, but I want to know what your thought are. Who do you, if you were to pick one of those, what guy breaks the 20-point a game level next season?
I think you called it with Turner. It's gonna depend on Victor Victor Oladipo, I guess, because I think he's going to have the ball in his hands more. So, you know, if he just decides that he's going to shoot more instead of, like, passing it to Turner in the pick and pop or in the pick and roll, then I could see that changing things. But I think, yeah, Miles Turner has the easier path just because, like, people still don't guard him from, like, that 18 to 20 foot range, and he's just money from right there. And he's going to get better, like, at post-ups, apparently, and I think he'll also get better at, like, rolling hard and finishing at the rim, and he's just going to have a lot of clean, easy looks. So, I think it's going to be him. I'd agree with you.
Yeah, I also think Turner's three-point shooting might be better next year, too. I mean, it was decent. He's gotten better each year, and I think he continues to get better. He might start making two or three a game next year, which could definitely, because easily vault him into 20 points, because he's going to get a ton of post-up chances and probably a lot of put-back chances. And I'm interested to see, though, if his ball handling skills, the Pacers almost do that thing where what the Warriors do, where if Draymond gets a rebound, he runs it up. I wonder if they would start doing that with Turner. That would be kind of interesting to watch.
That would be cool to see. Like, just give him the opportunity to grow any aspect of his game.
Because I think he's not like a great ball handler, but I think he could do what Draymond does. Because that's a big thing that helps push the pace for NBA teams, too, is just whoever gets the rebound, just take it up, because it gets everybody moves, it gets things going quicker. It's why the Thunder, part of their strategy last year, was like letting Westbrook get the rebounds off free throws, because he pushes it up so fast. I mean, it was part of a stat inflation, but part of it was that, I think, part of it was also, it did help the offense flow really well. Like, they would push it up really fast. So, interesting to see with that. And then with Oladipo, I mean, I think Oladipo, it just depends what his shooting percentage is. I think he's going to get 15 to 20 shots a game because the ball's going to be in his hand 30-40% of each possession. Like, he'll bring up the ball probably 30% of the possessions during the game. So we'll just see how well he shoots, because he was not a great three-point shooter last year, but he could be better. I mean, he is working on it, so I don't know what your thoughts on Oladipo are.
Yeah, I think, I don't know much about the three-point percentage. That's just going to depend on, you know, yeah, how much he works on it in the offseason. But I think he'll definitely have an easier path to the basket than he did in Orlando or in OKC, because I think, not that the Pacers are some world-beating three-point shooting team next year, but they might be the best three-point shooting team that he's been on, even though that's not saying much because Orlando and OKC are both pretty garbage from long range. But he'll have the space to, like, do his, like, dynamic driving to the rim, and he'll be able to cut. And so I think he'll get easier looks at the rim than he's probably seen for a while. And so then if he can add in, like, three-point shooting, even just a little bit on top of that, like, you know, I wouldn't be shocked if he and Turner both get to the 20-point mark, just because I think they'll be, like, the clear first and second options on the team.
Yeah, with the three-point shooting thing, so I was thinking about, I kind of think this might be the best three-point shooting team. So do you think, so, like, Collison shot over 40, close to 40% last year. Bogdanović, I think, shoots close to 40, 30, like, high 30s. Thad Young, we haven't seen without his wrist being hurt, how well a three-point shooter is. But do you think that it's the best three-point team Pacers are going to have? Like, he's going to be on, or you think maybe, like, Collison's and Bogdanović's three-point shooting is a product of who they played around before in some sense? So, like, I'm kind of expecting a huge kind of dip in all, like, Bogdanović's three-point shooting, because he's not playing by John Wall and Bradley Beal anymore. I'm not sure about Collison. He's not played anybody great, but I'm not sure I see this being, I mean, I think it's, see it being a better three-point shooting team than any Pacer team maybe I've seen, but I'm not sure I see it being something great. I don't know what your thoughts are.
Sure, I definitely don't think they're going to be the Warriors or the Rockets, but I think that the team is populated with at least average three-point shooters. I don't think Collison or Bogdanović are going to be below average. Like, I think they'll be 36% or better. So I think even that threshold is good enough to be better than Oladipo or even the Pacers have seen in several years. And then on the bench, you've got, like, Corey Joseph isn't a great three-point shooter, but he's above average from the corners on catch and shoots, which is really the only shots he's going to get. GR3 is a good three-point shooter, and maybe TJ Leaf has range. So I think you've got enough, at least average guys, to put you in the average to slightly above average category, which is really where the bar is.
You have any worry that maybe, I mean, Nate McMillan, I don't think is a great coach. I'm kind of worried maybe that he doesn't get the right scheme design to be able to spread the floor. Is there any, you have any worry about that?
Yeah, I see where you're coming from. I don't really know too much about what he has planned. That would definitely be, I could see how he could kind of tarnish the any spacing they might have, but I guess I'm just a wishful thinker that, you know, if you just spaced like three guys outside of a like Oladipo Turner pick and roll pick and pop, that seems like that would be intuitive enough that he would want to do that. But I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like they should be able to stretch all five guys out to the 3-point line that they start at least. Thad Young, like I said, is when his wrist wasn't hurt last season, I think he was a decent 3-point shooter. I don't know how healthy his wrist is. I don't know what's going on with that. But if they are able to kind of, I mean, it seems like it makes sense. You just bring all five guys out away from the rim and you run pick and rolls and slashes and stuff like that. So I agree with you on that. So with the shoot small forward and point guard positions, McMillan has said it's going to be Collison and Bogdanovich. Do you think, I mean, I know you wrote about Corey Joseph and Glenn Robinson. Do you think either of them should be starting for the Pacers?
I think if it's going to be one of them, I would take Glenn Robinson. I wouldn't be super shocked if Glenn Robinson is the starter by the end of the season. I think that you can definitely make the argument that he's a more valuable player than Bogdanovich. And I think you might even want to just move Glenn Robinson up to the starting lineup just so that you've got a little bit more playmaking on the second unit. I know that's where they want Lance to kind of run the show, but I'm not sure he can do it all by himself. And like Corey Joseph isn't really a playmaker. TJ Leaf, if he's going to be like the backup four, you know, he's a rookie. And then like whether it's Sabonis at the backup five or at the backup four or Kevin Serafin, it's a pretty big dearth of playmaking and ball handling on the second unit. So I wouldn't mind moving Bogdanovich there and then giving Glenn Robinson some run with the starters, because I think he'll be better with better guys around him. So I think just even from just a fit standpoint, I think it makes sense for him to be in the starting lineup. But it seems like Bogdanovich is definitely going to be there from the jump, but I wouldn't be shocked if GR3 gets in there by the end. As far as point guards, I think Darren Collison is definitely the better player. So I understand where he's, you know, it makes sense that he's going to be the starter. Corey Joseph is just, he's not super great at, like, point guard things. What he really brings to the table, in my view, is that he fits well with Lance and Oladipo. And so I think putting him in the second unit, like, pairing him with Lance makes a lot of sense.
You don't think the bench is going to be run by the Serafin Lance Stevenson duo kind of thing? I think that's what our bench is going to basically be. It's what it seemed like if they want it to be, because they didn't cut Serafin when they had the opportunity, it seems like it's just going to be kind of the Lance Serafin pick and roll, whatever they were doing in the playoffs last year, lobs, whatever kind of thing. And I could see
that. I would love to see that.
Yeah, I mean, I could definitely see Bogdanovich fitting into that very well, kind of in the corner, and they run Stevenson and Serafin wants a pick and roll thing, and then they kick it out to him for a corner three. Right. But I sort of agree with you on the sense that Bogdanovich and Collison should start. But I think when it comes to minute-wise, Robinson and Bogdanovich are going to split, probably both play the same amount of minutes, same with Collison and Joseph. Maybe Collison gets a little bit more because he's a little more experienced. But I think because the Pacers are trying to actually win next year, they're going to start Bogdanovich and Collison because they're veterans that can sort of give them a little more presence on the floor, a little more stability. If they weren't trying to win like 35 games, 40 games next year, then I would say start Joseph and start Rhett Robinson and see what you have, because I think Robinson, it could be special. I mean, I don't think he's going to be a superstar, but I think he's got some potential to be a really good NBA player, like a 15-a-point kind of game kind of guy with really solid defense, because he showed it last year when he subbed in for Paul George for some of those games when he was hurt mid-season. So I'm a big Glenn Robinson fan. I liked your article on him because I'm a big fan of him. I didn't like some of your hate stuff on him, but I liked overall. I'm a big fan of him. So predictions for next season wise, where do you think the Pacers end up win wise? Let's start there. Yeah. Where do you think they end up win wise?
I think right now I'm kind of where my head is at is between 31 and 34 wins. I think that they aren't going to, you know, they're definitely not like a contender by any means, but the bottom of the East is just such garbage that like just by showing up, I feel like you're already to that place. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's more than 34 wins. I would be surprised if it's under 31. I feel like they're going to break 30 just from attendance, like just by default. So that's where I'm at.
So I had kind of Tony last week, and I said the Pacers won, let's say they won 37, 38 games. Would Nate McMillan basically win Coach of the Year because the Pacers lost three last games without Paul George? Like, that would be that kind of jump. But, like, I agree with you. And the East is so bad that they could just walk into 35 wins. I mean, I don't want them to because that would be kind of – it might be kind of a boring year. But they could – the way the schedule could play out, they could end up with 35 wins in the eighth seed. I mean, that's how bad the East is. But so – I mean, some trade possibilities in the year. So I'm going to run a scenario for you. So, like, if the Pacers end up – the 50-game mark, about the trade deadline mark, they're like 20 and 30. Do you see any trades Pacers could make? You think they just dump the roster and tank? What's kind of your thoughts?
I think that would be the right move. It doesn't seem like, based on what we've seen from Herb and from the front office's like spin zone, is that tanking or like even visibly tanking is something that they're really interested in. If someone gives like an above market offer for Thaddeus Young, I think you'd be stupid not to do it. Like, he's not part of your future, and if someone wants him, like, let them have him. I don't really see a market for him. It's hard to come up with like what a good return would be that like another team would actually do, because any team that's going to trade for him is going to be a team that was trying to be competitive and has like a hole at the power forward position where he would be an upgrade. And that Venn diagram is pretty narrow. The one that I keep lobbying for, which is very unrealistic, is if the Knicks trade Carmelo Anthony and for some reason decide that Thaddeus Young would be like a really good part of their team. Like, Thaddeus Young is really good and he's like a great veteran. I'm not trying to like slander him by any means. I love Thaddeus Young.
I understand.
But just like he's not like a rebuilding type guy. But so I keep telling in our Slack that if the Knicks trade Carmelo Anthony, just somehow convince Steve Mills to give up like two high seconds for Thaddeus Young. But that's just my fever dream scenario. Otherwise, like, as far as like tank trades at the deadline, I feel like he's the guy. I'm not sure who else you trade. Like, maybe someone wants like Bogdanovich again, but I feel like he's young enough to just keep him and see what you have. That's really the only guy I can come up with.
Yeah, I agree with you on Thad Young, that he's a very good NBA player. He can put up 15 points a game. He'll get rebounds. He'll do everything right. He'll fight hard for offensive rebounds and stuff like that. He just doesn't fit a rebuilding team. He would probably be pretty decent on a contender. And I could imagine some team, maybe like the Rockets or something that's kind of like close, that would offer, that has like a low first round pick, might offer it for him. Just, I don't think the Rockets have any of their first round picks, but something kind of that line, because he could kind of help a team just be kind of another role player for a team. I think, though, Collison and Bogdanovich are both should be worried that if they don't, Pacers don't end up 500 to the first 50 games, that they'd be on the trading block, because both their contracts are basically non-guaranteed. Second season, they're very low money, partial guarantees, so they're basically expirings. And I would imagine that if Pacers see they're going to be bad, they might not, because like you said, Simon and Pritchard probably don't want to tank, but if the Pacers are 15 and 35 at the 50 game mark, they should tank and try to get the first pick, because that's the best way to get good. That's the best way. I mean, we don't know if we have injuries too. Like, if Oladipo or Turner got hurt too, that could kind of throw this whole thing off. I was for tanking from the start, so I'm always leaning towards wanting them to tank, but
yeah.
I think it's become evident that's not what they want to do. So I'm going to ask you a weird question, it might be. So imagine you're Kevin Pritchard, and you basically, if you're saying where the team is heading, what would you kind of say? Like, if you're saying the direction of the team is heading, what would be kind of your thoughts on that? If you're him, what would he be saying?
I think what I would be saying is that we're entering into like a decision-making scenario where everything that we do and everything that we think about is centered around how it helps Miles Turner's development. And like, so the era that we're moving into is the era where Miles Turner is our best player, and like all the personnel decisions, all the scheme decisions, everything we think about is put through the filter of, does this help Miles Turner's development or does it hinder it? And if it hinders it, don't do it. If it helps it, do it. And I think that's like, even from a team building standpoint, you're trying to build around Miles Turner. From a like, what type of offense and defense do we run? Like, how do we defend the pick and roll? Like, what type of offense do we do? It's all about, like, does this help Miles Turner become the best player that he can be? Because I think the best player that he can be is really, really, really good.
Yeah, I can agree with that. So my last question is, so with the Pacers, if you're thinking about, what was my question? God dang it. I told him space now, and I had it in my head for a second. Oh, I know, I got it. I'll cut this part out. Sorry.
You're good.
Are you sure we aren't overrating the Pacers in some sense? So, like, for example, you said 31 to 34 wins. Are you sure we're not, like, underrating how bad of a coach Nate McMillan is? Are we overrating how good Miles Turner is? Is there any thought like that? Like, I'm getting the same thought. Everybody thinks we're going to win 30 games, but are we sure we're going to be that good? Like, we weren't that good last year, and we had one of the best, like you said, 12 players in the league. Are we sure we're not going to crater out and win 25 games this year?
I see where you're coming from. They have huge flaws, and, like, Nate McMillan is a bad coach. And if Victor Oladipo or Miles Turner gets hurt, like, that changes everything. Like, they're just absolute trash. But it's where I'm coming from with, like, the 31 games almost isn't really based on the Pacers. It's based on, like, well, they're better than the Bulls. They're better than the Magic. They're better than the Knicks. They're better than the Nets. They're better than the Hawks. There might be, like, if something crashes and burns, they might be better than the Pistons. Like, we don't know what the Hornets are. So, like, it's almost just based on the competition that they're playing and not really about the team itself. It's like, well, this team is, like, bad, but they're not that bad. Like, they're not as bad as this slate of seven other teams that they're going to be playing, you know, three or four times. So that's sort of where I'm coming from. It's like, but if Miles Turner is, like, out for 6 months, then, you know, this all goes to hell. Just throw it in the trash can.
I agree. So what are you working on writing-wise? What's, like, your next story?
We're trying to finish up the Love-Hate series, and then so it won't be this week. It'll be next week. The week of the August 7th is we're going to have Miles Turner week. So it's going to be a bunch of Miles Turner-themed posts. So I got a couple things in the work for that. I got a post about his shot selection. I'm rewatching every shot he took from 2016-2017 season and just basically saying what my conclusions were. So we got a lot of exciting posts there. So make sure to tune in the week of August 7th for Miles Turner week.
Thank you, Hunter, for joining today's Locked On Pacers podcast. I hope to have you on again. Again, thank you to SeatGeek, which is the presenting sponsor of the Locked On Pacers podcast. If you're going anywhere to buy tickets to any sporting event or concert, make sure to use SeatGeek, one of the best ticketing sites around, and use the promo code LOMBA to get a discount on those tickets. Remember, use the promo code LOMBA. That's it for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Tune in next week. I'm not going to say who the guest is yet, but tune in next week and remember to stay tuned for some new updates from the Locked On Pacers podcast. For now, have a great day, afternoon, evening, night, however you're enjoying this podcast. Thank you so much for listening.
Napa know-how. It takes a lot to get excited about a bag, but most bags can't save you 20% on auto parts. That's 20% off headlamps, 20% off oil filters, 20% off virtually anything you can fit inside the 99-cent Napa reusable bag. So tell your buddies, there's a bag they just have to check out. Quality parts, helpful people. That's Napa know-how. Napa know-how. At participating Napa Auto Parts stores while supplies last. Minimum three items. Exclusions apply. Offer ends 10/31/17.